I think the first thing you did on a podcast was smoke weed. So now,
remember that time that how did that go? We were talking about how it's a kid friendly show or something like that, and then you could hear my bong bubbling. And
are we live? Are we recording?
We're recording. We've been recording for a little bit.
Oh, good.
More footage is always better. And it doesn't have to be like a fluid conversation for this, because I can just edit shit. So I don't care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
But that's why I was like, the first thing you did on a podcast was smoke weed, because now the last thing. You're going to do on a podcast to smoke weed. What? So are you leaving for good? Or you don't know?
It's to be determined. I have no idea.
Yeah, that's the way most people do. Just take a hiatus.
And I realize, like, it's not lost on me that we aren't an airport and that I don't need to announce my departure, but it's not.
It's generally best, though, for, like, when you get into your status, it's generally a good idea to be like, hey, guys, leave me alone for a bit.
Yeah.
So, I like that you say I have status.
You do. Everybody came to your, like, your post and they were like, oh, people were saying some nice shit.
Yeah, I definitely did. If there's a way to archive that post, I would appreciate that.
Yeah, Facebook will archive it.
Yeah, it ain't going anywhere unless I make it go somewhere.
No, don't make it go anywhere. I'm just going to be an asshole and go delete it real quick. Nobody better say anything nice unless it's about me. But yeah, it's generally a good
idea. A rare moment of sobriety where I was just like, you know what? Like, I can't put my focus into this at all. And it takes energy out of me to watch the community and not be part of it, really. Like, and not have the energy to put anything into it, right?
Yeah.
It's tough to take a leave from anything that you really enjoy or from a group of people you know actually care about you. I don't experience that a lot in my life, and The Secret is the one of the very few places that I do. And so, you know, I'm just taking an indefinite hiatus, you know what I mean? Like, I don't, obviously nobody ever truly leaves The Secret, unfortunately, but
well, I think the good thing about The Secret is it's 40 something years old and it hasn't really changed that much. So it's not like you're going to be missing anything. Like, you leave for a year, 2 years, 10 years, it doesn't matter.
No.
Just pop back in, say hi.
Yeah.
I mean, people do that shit all the time. Like, Robert Fox just pops in occasionally and he's like, hey, what's up? Saw this on my feed.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll probably surprise everyone with an episode of Cole's Corner one day when they least expect it. Because that was a lot of fun. That was pure arrogance almost on show, because I had things I wanted to say, and I had achieved a level of, I'll use the word notoriety, that allowed me to an audience, essentially, right? Like, you know, somebody had commented in the thing that I posted, because I said how, you know, I thank people for letting me continue to teach this sort of stuff and teach the things that I've learned, you know, going through The Secret. And, you know, and they were like, teach, like, if you know how to teach this stuff, why are you out getting the casks kind of thing? And, you know, it's like, that's not really what I meant, right? Like, I'm not giving lessons because I know this stuff. I'm just saying what I think. And luckily, you know, I've made enough friends in the group to, you know, like I said, acquire an audience. And so, you know, I really like those because they're very subject specific. You know what I mean? Like, I did the episode on hands. I had one that I was going to do on balls. And maybe one day I still will. It was after the gift givers post last year at Christmas. I was good because they had the picture of the Christmas balls in it. And I was going to do an episode on that. And then things kind of changed for me. But, you know, I still might one day. But
I really would like Cole's opinion on balls.
Yeah.
Well, you were good at those because, like, it was concise, right? Like, you knew the point you wanted to make and you just fucking made it and you stayed on track, as opposed to like Sunday Fun Days or podcast episodes where we just start talking about balls. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%.
And I think that's like, I think that's a good thing. Like, rather than looking at the puzzle always as a larger, broad scope kind of thing, taking out individual parts and analyzing them, you know, I think that does some good in these puzzles. You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of times people get overwhelmed because the puzzle is so big, if you will. But if you can narrow down your scope of focus, you know, then it can help, right? That's why, like, my favorite episode I did was the one on hands, because I put a lot of work into it, first of all. And second of all, like, it just was, it's something that not a lot of people talk about, right? Is like, what are these people in these pictures doing? What are their hands doing? You know, things like that. And what are they designed to signify? And in doing that, you kind of end up, you give yourself permission and the ability then to look at other aspects that are very seemingly minor, but are, could possibly be the most important part of the image, right? Like, the smallest thing in Boston's image was the thing that made it found, essentially, right? The foot and the ball, or the home plate. They're such minor little details that you have to use some real imagination to see, because A, their whole point in that image is to highlight the end of the sleeve, but at the same time, like, it's telling you, you know, this is where it is. That leg could be anything, right? The same way people see Big Jacks in the leg of the New Orleans guy. You know, it's kind of like that, where it's seemingly so minor, but could potentially crack the whole thing wide open, right?
Yeah. And it's a good way to look at stuff too, because that's how, like, when an artist is making their art, that's how they look at the art. They don't just draw hands, right? They think to themselves, what is this person doing? What is the action being performed? What does his hands need to look like in order to do what I'm trying to convey? And that's how an artist hides clues, as opposed to, like, all the people online who are like, well, he's writing microscopic encyclopedia entries in the, you know, brush strokes, you know, like,
in one pixel.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that hands video perfectly illustrated, like, this is how an artist sort of composes something in order to convey a message.
Well, I think too, like, it shows you that there's intention behind everything. You know what I mean? Like, sure, one could say that these guys, that all the characters in these pictures have hands because people have hands 99% of the time, right? But, like, it's the way that they're pictured that matters, right? Like, but yeah, like, there's an intention behind every detail in these pictures. And ultimately, the intention is to help us find them. And they're terrible at that, but they do, that is the intention, right?
Yeah.
Like, that whole Boston Pops thing, like, that's, I get it, right?
Yeah, it's just not good. I don't get it.
You know, and, like, I remember when I was down in Florida talking to you and Steven, you know, I had mentioned how when I saw the wiki on the onset of my secret career, if you will, when I saw the wiki and they mentioned how everybody thought that place, that image was the Boston one, like, the first clue that I really noticed was the name Boston in the picture, right? And a lot of people found that last, or when, I think JJP actually talked about it at the meetup, or, like, at the ceremony when they brought Crew Pat out and stuff. But, like, that was one of the first things I saw. And it was weird to me how, like that shocked Steven to hear it, right? And I liked that, right? Like, it was interesting. But again, like, it's, to me, that was a very obvious clue, whereas the Boston Pops thing was so convolutedly gray, you know, for lack of better expression.
It's not something we would have ever gotten unless we were told. And I'm worried that the rest of these puzzles have shit like that in them. Something where you're trying to convey a message, but the image doesn't actually convey any part of that message.
Or it's conveying something that you, like, you really got to know your Boston really to get that. You know what I mean? Like,
well, like, I liked John Michaels had a thing because, like, the beak of the bird is pointing towards the N and the thing. And he thought that meant Beacon Street. And that, to me, makes more sense than Boston Pops.
I go back a lot to the time when, like, JJP has talked a lot about Cleveland, how there's something in that picture that people haven't really found. And, I think about that a lot, because it's like, what about the other ones that we found, that, like, what's in those other pictures that we just aren't seeing? You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, and if you look at Boston historically, regardless of what you saw publicly, the things that were important in the Boston image, nobody figured out until they were basically right. told, you know? I mean, people had talked about the lag in home plate, but never with as much importance as it had. The Boston thing they didn't talk about, the semaphore flags they didn't talk about, Boston Pops they didn't talk about, you know, the baseball diamond in the hair. Like,
yeah, what I like about that, though, is that so we didn't learn about Boston Pops until JJP told us. But what that tells me is that you don't need those super distinct clues, right? Like, they were found without them, right? You know, and so it's nice to know at least that, you know, that you can not know those things and still find a cask. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I always loved the prospect. I remember when Brett Zingler was still on the show, he would talk sometimes about, like, you know, could you find this without even knowing the puzzle existed? Right. Let's say you were just metal detecting or something one day and something set it off. So you dug a hole and you found this cask, right? Like, obviously you could reverse engineer a solution that way, but what a concept. You know what I mean?
Honestly, I think you could find all of these without knowing that the paintings exist.
Yeah.
Given enough time. Like, if you were given the verses in a city, like just the city, you'd be fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Could you find the city with just the verse?
No, I think that would be difficult with some of them. Some of them, yeah. Like St. Augustine, you could find. Boston, you could find. Some of them would be difficult. But if you were just given a city in the verse, like if you were just given a city of Chicago in the verse, you could find it. If you were just given the city of Cleveland and the verse, that one might be tricky, but you could still find it.
That's probably one of the more interesting things overall about The Secret is that is its delivery. You know what I mean? Like there was like the paintings and the verse and stuff. And like you say, like if they had just said, here's a city, here's a verse, go find it. Right. Good chance all 12 would be found by now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And however, I digress because now we have that, right? We have the image, the verse, and the cities because how many times has it been confirmed to us that the cities are correct, right? And so by the people that made the puzzle, by the way, you know, now we have that. And I think I do see in the community people that are attempting to use just the verse or just the image and knowing what the city that they're in. You know what I mean?
There are some.
It's nice to see a different approach, right?
I think the podcast created one of the biggest downfalls because we started promoting everything as a puzzle. When, like I've said this before, Byron didn't call this a puzzle. The book doesn't call this book a puzzle. It calls it a treasure hunt. And treasure hunts are way different from puzzles. You know? Like, if I were to hand you a treasure map, there's no puzzle to it. You find the place, you follow the directions, you dig up the thing. You know? Yeah. And if we were to follow The Secret in that way, we would have made a lot more progress. Or at least if people for the past 40 years had followed it that way. Most of these have been found, I think.
Yeah. What we have gained in the last few years is a more succinct way of diving into these puzzles. You know what I mean? Like, we know now you can't just force feed the puzzle your theory and make it work, or vice versa. You know what I mean? Like, I think the community has finally accepted that you can't fit your theory to make the puzzle correct, or vice versa. You know what I mean? Like, you have to fit your theory within the puzzle, not the other way around, in order to get anywhere, right? It doesn't help to, you know, you and JM used to use a word an expression, I can't remember off the top of my head, but brute force, right? To try to brute force the puzzle into fitting your theory, and it just can't work that way.
Yeah, and the community is really coming around to that, because like when you first started, which was prior to Expedition Unknown, just shortly before that, right? Like you found it via rabbits. So it was just shortly before Expedition Unknown. When you found it and the Expedition Unknown people came in, there was a lot of brute forcing. There was a lot of there was a lot of like derailed conversations about nothing, you know, a lot of people going off on tangents. But now it seems like the community really has come to that realization where now you have people posting these weird tangents and they're largely just ignored. You know, you have people talking about alternate cities and they're largely just ignored. I think people are starting to realize, okay, there is a formula. There's a, not really a formula, but there's sort of, there's a logic behind all of this.
Yeah.
God, what was the biggest argument during the first expedition unknown people were the back of the book. And even that's largely ignored now. People are just like, whatever, do your own thing. Draw your lines if you want, whatever.
Yeah.
Did you have any experience with puzzles before? Like rabbits?
Other than rabbits, not really. No, like the word puzzle to me always just meant jigsaw puzzle. Yeah. I used to really enjoy those, like, what are they called? The, oh man, Maverick has a few of those books where it's like, it's a photograph of like a table with a bunch of shit all over it. And you got to find specific things, right? Like a safety pin or hammer, whatever. Right? Like,
where's Waldo?
Look and find where's Waldo, that sort of thing. But not this extent. And even to say that rabbits gave me the experience of the puzzle is sort of a misnomer, because rabbits just taught me what an ARG is.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And often ARGs have puzzles worked into them. But for the most part, that's kind of the way I was looking at it. And so when I found the secret, I thought about it in the same vein as I do rabbits. Like, how do you play this game? Like, how do you, you know, what are the rules? What are the pieces that we're working with? You know, things like that. And, I learned a lot. Like, Chris Woodford, who's always been one of my favorite human beings since meeting him, he always used to say that, you know, we need to stop looking at this as like, as a puzzle, and more so like a scavenger hunt or a treasure hunt. There is a fine line, I guess, between the two types of things, right? And I sort of always keep that in my brain, that, you know, it isn't, you know, a jigsaw where you've got pieces that are all weird shapes and you got to fit them together somehow. In a metaphorical sense, it sort of is like that, but it's not how you do it. You know what I mean? It's not just a matter of finding pieces and putting them on a table. This is identifying the pieces, first of all, figuring out what their purpose is, and then expounding from that into a solution or, you know, an idea. So,
yeah,
I never really had much otherwise.
But so when you first came in, Guy remembers some strange call posts.
I had the underground
cask. Yeah, the indoor cask. Which I don't remember. There's an underground mall or something in Montreal.
Yeah.
And
they call it the underground city, actually. It's basically just a big mall.
Oh, the only thing I remember was there was a planter and a lamp, and the lamp shines a shadow on the planter, and you dig that planter.
Well, the light actually shined on the planter. It wasn't that it was a shadow. I was never a proponent of shadow theory. But
well, I could remember. I remember there was a way to pinpoint, but I just assumed.
Yeah,
it's a shadow.
Yeah, I put a lot of. I wrote a pretty. I wish I could still find that report, but I made a pretty deep.
I remember you emailed me something, so I might be able to find that.
So the first person I ever talked to in the community was JM, and I had just come back from a trip to Ottawa, and we were. Partying down in a place called Majors Island Park, which looks up at the back of the Parliament building in Ottawa, like where our prime minister and stuff works. And from the angle we were at, it looked a lot like the Milwaukee building, like the picture or the building in the Milwaukee image. And so I asked JM, I was like, has anybody ever thought that maybe there's a cask in Ottawa because X, Y, and Z or whatever. And, you know, rather than be a jerk about anything, he just said, well, nobody's ever really questioned Milwaukee being Milwaukee. And at that point, I had no idea what anybody had ever questioned or talked about, right? Like, I kind of figured everything was still very up in the air as far as the definitive location or anything like that. I kind of expanded on a lot of that stuff, which led me to Montreal, of course. But for me, like, the most interesting thing, and the reason it's like my being Canadian really had nothing to do with the fact that I was looking into Montreal. What intrigued me the most about Montreal is that it's the only image that is indoors, essentially. Like, there's no outside, really. Like, New Orleans, I guess you could say, is kind of like that. But even that has a sky and stars in the clock, things like that. Like, there is no indication of an outside And that's when I started thinking about the indoor cask, right? Like, how crazy would it be if one of them happened to be inside? And so I looked into the underground city and things like that. And eventually I discovered the Mount Stephen Club. And I thought, well, anybody thought to go look on the shelves of the Mount Stephen Club? And, you know, fast forward a few years and a guy that I was working with, who I don't think is in the community anymore, but a guy I was working with that lived in Montreal, he actually went and spoke to the managers, I guess is the word I want to use. I don't think I can use the word owners of Mount Stephen Club, but, you know, he went and spoke to them and they couldn't really recall much because the people he spoke to were like next generation managers, like the people that would have been there in the 80s are all gone. And so, and gone doesn't necessarily mean dead. It's just they aren't involved with Mount Stephen Club anymore. You know, and eventually I came to, I just started noticing a lot of things about it that couldn't take me away from Mount Stephen Club. So that became my official place, if you will. And, you know, that's that. But knowing what, like the renos and stuff that happened to that place, you know, I would love to go and dig a hole in the exact spot that I thought of, but it would kind of be a moot point. Like it's
still find it odd that Montreal is the one verse where they tell you to seek permission to dig. So somebody knows something about this, but yeah. No one has ever sought out the people who worked at Mount Stephen's Club. And no one has ever sought them out. Like the people who worked there in the '80s, it shouldn't be hard to figure out who like the owner, the manager or whatever was. It shouldn't be hard to figure out who you should talk to.
But yeah, and after Montreal, I moved on to looking in more into the more important wasn't so much let's look at each city individually. It was I wanted to look at the whole thing, right? And that's kind of why I got into the podcast in the first place is because it was a place to be able to talk about the puzzle as a whole rather than always just thinking about one city. You know what I mean? Like it helps, I think, to do one of two things, either concentrate only on one place or look at the puzzle as a whole and apply what you learn there to the smaller sections, right?
Yeah. Oh, it's hard. It's hard to focus on one city because once you start focusing on one city, like you're getting so much from the front part of the book, like the vanishing and the passage, you're getting so much information about other cities. You're getting so much like categorical information that it's hard to stay focused on that one city. You kind of have to branch out and look at it as a whole.
Yeah. Well, I think too, like on the most broad fundamental level, like there is as far as I can tell, there is an overarching, I'm going to use the word philosophy very loosely here when it comes to the puzzle, but, you know, and I think it helps more to do that, but then, you know, you raised a good point where, you know, if you focus just on one puzzle, a lot of times you'll find things that the other puzzles kind of, that sort of relate to the other puzzles, and that can make things kind of frustrating. So, you know, having said that, it's nice to find those things because it just tells you that, yes, these puzzles are connected essentially, right? But, you know, seeing things in one doesn't necessarily mean that it's, you know, true for the other sort of thing. And I think that's where a lot of people that follow the back of the book kind of fall short, is because there are things back there that that are so vague that you could apply it to literally any other part of the puzzle and you can confirm for yourself whether or not it's true. Yeah. Right? Like it's, I mean, like no offense to the anagram community, but I just think like given the amount of words that you can create with other words and you know, like they're just,
dude, the anagram community doesn't even make words anymore. They just make like two letters and they're like, this means
a lot of times they don't make actual anagrams either.
Yeah.
I just think like it's, you're almost shooting yourself in the foot by overloading yourself with this information, right? And coming up with new ways to look at it. Like there is a very distinct way of seeing this. And a lot of time, and only like what, how many people have found cast? 2, 3. And then the Chicago guys was 3 guys?
Between 3 and 5, depending on what day.
Roughly 8 people have found these things in the ground. And, you know, I highly doubt it was because they overloaded themselves and they, you know.
Yeah. And a lot of these weird connections people are finding is just seriously just coincidence, right? Like you're dealing with 12 puzzles that have to do with immigration to the U.S. at about the same time, you know, a bunch of different immigration groups at about the same time to the same country. They're going to involve the same people. They're going to involve the same routes. They're going to involve the same themes without needing to be connected. It's just like when people start looking for Mark Twain stuff. Like you're going to find Mark Twain shit in every single city just because it's Mark Twain, right? Like,
it's Mark Twain,
so you're going to find a lot of, if you start looking at people involved in immigration or immigration struggles, or, you know, like even just like officials like George Washington, you're going to find connections everywhere, not because the puzzle has these connections, but because George Washington's everywhere.
Yeah. Well, it's like the Olmsted stuff, right? Like the guy that built all those parks.
Yeah.
Right? His last name is Olmsted, I think it is. Like you can find him in every city in The Secrets.
Because he made parks in every city.
Yeah.
Like it's...
I'm sure he probably has one in Sheboygan.
Yeah. Like if you start looking at stained glass lamps, you're going to find a lot of Tiffany lamps. That doesn't mean all those Tiffany lamps are, you know, connected to the puzzle. It just means Tiffany made a lot of damn lamps.
Yeah. I think maybe the leg eater might be an exception there because, like, there are lots of them all over the place. Whether they look exactly like that one at Mount Stephen Clave is questionable, but, you know, there are other ones. Somebody found one a long time ago, apparently in Montreal somewhere else, and they refused to tell anyone where it was because they weren't team players. But,
yeah, I think a friend of yours knows where that is, and if you ask her, she'll probably tell you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it had nothing really to do with anything. So there, somebody found that one, and there's some in Italy, and that's it. That's all that's ever been found.
But yeah, it was more important to me, like, overall to not focus just on one place. Like I wanted to focus on the mechanics more than anything. I like to see how things are built and how they work inside. You know, it's funny that episode of Cole's Corner I was going to do about balls kind of got ruined. Because the gift giver made their post and people were commenting and stuff. And as soon as I saw the post, I was like, fuck yeah, I have a really cool idea. And it was going to be about New York. But then somebody in the comment, like in the section, there was somebody I'd never seen before. I can't even tell you if I've seen them, their name in it since. They made a comment that was basically the premise of the whole episode. And so I was like, well, fuck, I don't want to do that now. Because then it looks like I'm just ripping this guy off.
I can't wait. There's going to be a sort of semi gift giver this year. And it's going to fuck with people so hard. Oh my God.
How do you know that, George?
I just know. So you can know. I don't give a shit if you know. So you know that painting that no one knows? Like John started a painting and it was incorporated into The Secret. Like it was a personal work.
The guy in front of the trees?
No. Like when they were creating The Secret, they were running out of time. So John had this like personal painting that he was painting just for himself. And Byron saw it and was like, let's use that. So they changed it to be a secret painting. And I always thought it was Milwaukee, and it's not, it's San Francisco.
Wild.
Yeah. So that's going to come out. And then John's going to release secret drawings.
Oh, cool. Sketches.
Yeah.
I should get me one of those.
They're going to be expensive. I'm not even going to be able to get me one of these. Because I think he's aiming for like $2,000-$3,000.
Yeah.
But they're going to be like, it's not like tangentially related to The Secret. It is direct fucking related to The Secret. And no questions. I think he might even be... I don't know if any of them are studies from back in the day or if they're new. That part, I don't know yet. But if they're old studies, like, could you imagine the Chicago drawings that I got, but for like Montreal?
Yeah, that'd be tight.
I think he's also going to say something about both Montreal and Milwaukee being the last paintings painted. And that's why they have basically nothing in the image to help you.
They were the last two that he did? Wild. That doesn't surprise me. It's been a ride, man. I gotta say, like, I've been doing this now for 8 years, I guess. And, like, not even talking about the secret, but more so just the sense of community that's built into it. You know, it's hard to experience that on social media, especially, right? Like,
yeah.
Because my biggest problem has always been with social media that, you know, it gives everybody basically equal standings when it comes to their ability to express an opinion. And I always thought about it like in 1984, George Orwell's 1984, there's a line where he says, "We're all equal, but some of us are a little more equal than others." Right. And I think I sort of apply that to the secret community in a sense, because, I mean, yeah, because of social media, all of us have a place to express any opinion you want, but there's a large cross section of people and it's like they're talking for the sake of talking. You know what I mean? Like it's only to exercise that ability rather than exercising that ability with purpose. Right. Cause there's always that age old adage, well, you don't have a cask, so fucking nothing you say matters. And it's like, well, I mean, I actually have two now, replicas, and I'm like, you know, if I do Blue Sage 9, I'm gonna bury one of those casks as kind of like an homage, if you will.
That'd be cool.
Also, as an homage to rabbits, because when I first got into rabbits, the ninth iteration was going on, and so it, you know, it would just sort of be an homage to that as well. I try to fit an homage to rabbits into every single puzzle I make. And like 8's not the only one that's still active. I think 5 was never found, but there was a time limit on it, which was an experiment, if you will, and nobody found it. I was actually going through one of my sketchbooks the other day and I found the original artwork for Blue Sage 5 and kind of wanted to revamp it, almost like bring it back to life. Cause the prize, if you will, is still in the place I had it. But, you know, same with Blue Sage 1, it was found. Marion Schaefer Sakima, I hope I didn't butcher her name, but she was the one that figured that puzzle out. But she lives in Texas and never went and retrieved it. And I actually asked last year, I asked Brody if he would go down, because he was really close to the Clulat Gardens where that particular box is hidden. And as far as I know, it's still in the ground behind the telephone booth. And I asked him to go dig it up, but then he had another kid and life and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So it's still, as far as I know, it's still there.
Dude, you should have said something, because I'm in Brody's town like 3 times a year. Because Rachel's office, Rachel's like headquarters or work headquarters is like right down the road from his house. So every time we go to Christmas parties, like a month or so ago, I was like, I'm going to New Orleans. That's where I was going. So if you ever want it dug up, yeah, let me know. I'll let you know when I go back.
And the only reason I think it's still there too is because there's some like in the box, it's the cask, if you will, is a little casket. It's shaped like a coffin, and in it there's a voodoo doll and some other stuff, but there's also a note in it that has my like my email information and stuff, and I have never gotten an email from anyone about it, right? Like when Taylor won the last one, she had like part of the clues was you had to build this email address and then email the answer to the last clue. And that's how you won the game. Right. And, you know, and she figured it out and she, you know, she got the answer. Her and I think it was her husband were working together or just a close friend or something like that. I still owe her a prize and I haven't forgotten, for the record. It's potentially always still coming until you get it kind of thing. But, you know, and that was kind of the whole deal. And same with 8, like the treasure is buried in a little box and inside the box is my email information and stuff. So, you know, if anybody's found it, they just picked it up and threw it out, but it's wrapped in black tape. Like the little box is covered in electrical tape to seal out any water and stuff. Cause where it is gets a lot of fucking rain. And of course, snow melts and things like that. So, you know, and I think that's like, I love the inspiration that I took from the secret community to do Blue Sage. Like, yeah, you know, just like how people responded to, you know, my exit post and my Cole's Corner posts, I saw people that wanted to hear what I had to say. And like growing up, all I ever heard was that I talked too much, right? And nobody wants to listen and all this kind of shit, right? So, to be part of a community that actually looks at you and says, yeah, like, I want to hear what you have to say specifically. You know what I mean? Like, that meant the world to me. And so that's what inspired me to want to even start a puzzle company. I didn't get the name for it until puzzle number two, which was found by, I forget his name. I want to say it's Keith something. He sends me a picture every Christmas because Cape May is where it was. And he lives there and actually went to the site kind of thing and all this. But they make a beer called Cape May Breweries or something like that. It's in the South Point of New Jersey's island, if you will. But anyways, that park that I had put into the image is full of blue sage flowers. And so that's just where I took the name from kind of thing and kept it going after that. And I thought it was nice to just offer an alternative to, you know, to The Secret, right? Like, keep people in the puzzle mindset, but show them different puzzles, right?
Yeah. And it seems to have taken off. I mean, people were...
And I'm surprised I even got to make 8 of these things. Like, I kind of thought after a while people would get bored of it, but... You know, I'm finding new formats and stuff. Like, the last one was all video. This one, like the current one, is a mix of video, verse, pictures, things like that. And just a lot of dissection, if you will. But, you know, it was just an interesting experiment that seemed to take off pretty well. So if I ever have time to breathe again, I'll probably... You know, if nobody's found 8 by like March, then I'm going to probably just shut it down and then do 9. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And the fact that I've only had help on one of the puzzles, like the creation of one of the puzzles, was also something that I was proud of, because the people that I worked with it on, Arthur and Brody, like, they were, I'm going to use the word invaluable, in that they were like, there was no price point or thing, anything like that I could apply to their work that, you know, would definitively show you what it meant to me. Like, the fact that I had Arthur on there at all is what was huge to me. And, you know, Brody and I have been brothers basically since we met, just like Nick and I. And so to have them, like, and they approached me about it. Like, I had put a thing out saying that I wanted involvement from somebody else in the community to help me design a puzzle. And, you know, both of them came to me and we worked out that puzzle. And despite the fact that it was the fastest one found, it still meant as much to me as any of the other ones did because of the help that I had. Like, I did next to nothing short of approve everything that they brought to me. Right. And, you know, it was nice.
Yeah.
I got to be Byron for a minute. You know what I mean? Where I could say, I want you to work on the image. I want you to work on this verse. Let's talk about everything we put in. And see where we get, right?
You ever watched Inside the Actor's Studio?
Nope.
Really?
Yep.
All right, so it's just a panel show where this dude, who is dead now, the interview guy has since died, but it was a television show where this acting school would bring on very prominent actors and just ask about the craft, right? And they would have like master students sitting in the audience, and it was basically a class for the master students, but they would they would air it on TV because it was interesting to watch Robin Williams do an interview for 2 hours. You know what I'm saying? But I always liked the way that they ended, because they would end by asking a series of questions, the exact same questions to the people. And I can't ask you those questions because they're not really applicable. Well, some of them I can, like, what's your favorite cuss word?
My favorite cuss word?
Yeah.
Probably just fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. But it's like everybody's leaving now. We've had so many like leaving. It seems like 10 years is the cutoff. I'm the only one retarded enough to stay past 10 years. So I feel like we should have a series of questions. Right? Like,
let's do it right now.
Should we start negative or start positive and go negative and then back positive? Let's start negative. What's your least favorite thing about The Secret or the community?
The knee-jerk reaction people have when they first kind of join, where they think that it, like, they just know what they think they know. You know what I mean? Like, their knowledge is definitive because it's part of them. And so I get the confirmation bias that people constantly apply is what drives me the most insane. Right. That and the whole you don't have a cask, so you don't know nothing kind of idea. Like that retort to me is it's a huge cop out from the defending side, if you will, or the offending side.
Because it's like circular, right? I don't have a cask, so I don't know what I'm talking about, but you don't have one either, so you don't know what the fuck you're talking about either. So what are we doing here?
And it really, like, it shuts down conversation.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the fact that none of us have casks should not limit our ability to talk about it.
Well, generally, if you notice, the people who use that use it when they're backed into a corner, right? When 100%. their logic is failing, they're like, well, do you have a cask? No. So you don't know what you're talking about. Or you guys have been doing this for 40 years without any results. Forgetting the fact that we've been doing it for 40 years and found 3 casks.
Exactly. Yeah. There have been results.
Yeah, it's always like you're backed into a corner. So you're just using that. And it's essentially a sign. It's like waving a white flag.
Yep.
What's your least favorite experience?
So I've only ever blocked one person from the community, the secret community. I think he's still in it, but I don't see it, obviously. And what led me to that is one of my least favorite experiences, but also losing friends over something like this. You know what I mean? Like, as much as everybody else couldn't stand the kid, like, I actually really fucking liked him and I loved talking to him and I felt like he really liked talking to me. And then we had a bit of an issue with somebody else that we talked to in the community that I'm not going to bring up, and that just shut it all down. You know what I mean?
It's weird because he's not a bad guy. Like, I liked talking to him too. I liked having him around. I think when he was on Reddit, when he was like, before he turned into just major asshole for no reason, he was really good at keeping conversations grounded, you know, and he was really good at informing people. Like he would just tell you facts and he would have a conversation about them. And then he just kind of went batshit insane. You know,
yeah.
it was weird.
I miss talking to him quite a bit. Like we would spend 2-3 hours in a night, just me and him doing what you and I are doing now. And like you say, like he wasn't really a dick at first about how he presented the information, but over time that changed quite a bit. Like he would go from, you know, saying, okay, well, no, that can't be possible because in 1987, this was here, whatever, right? Whereas now, he has slowly devolved into, well, you're just an idiot, and you should know this stuff. And
well, I know a lot of that was like deflection, right? Because life got bad.
Yeah.
So and hopefully it got better, because like he's not around as much anymore. So hopefully it got better.
Yeah, I hope so. I really do. And I wish him well, regardless of anything that happened between us. But, you know, that's probably my least favorite thing was that I lost, you know, close friends that I thought I'd made. And I don't like doing that.
Yeah. We used to have one over here. That helps.
Oh, it does. It absolutely does.
And you still got Nick, probably. I don't have to talk to Nick in a while.
Oh, yeah. The hardcore group still exists.
Does it?
Yeah, it does. The chat group is, I think, 4 of us now. There's Nick, Carolyn, me, and Jason, and Rob.
I remember that shit with... Oh, fuck. That was my favorite. That was my favorite bad memory. The hardcore group with...
Yeah, that's what it... Like, I guess I could just tell you now, he's the only person I have blocked on here. Like, yeah. And it was because of that whole thing. Like, I don't know if you want to edit this out or not. You can leave it in. It's fine if you want. But what he did that didn't do was, like, took his time to get shitty. Right. Yeah. If I can be so blunt, whereas like just immediately turned on a guy, you know what I mean? Like as soon as you told him as soon as I mentioned to him that that picture was not Louis Armstrong or even, you know, even just contested his ideas, it was just like, well, fuck you, I'm out. You know what I mean? And so he started getting really, I don't know. I'm going to just use the word bad. Like I just didn't like him around. And so I was like, you know what? And then I'd see him talking on other posts and stuff. And it would upset me. And so I just finally said one day, I was like, you know what, dude, like I preach to people all the time that if you don't like somebody in the community, just block them. You won't see their posts, that kind of thing. So I better practice what I preach. Right.
Yeah.
So I did that, and I mean, I'm no worse for wear, and I don't he is either, but
I was in the same position as I don't know if any I don't know how many people caught on to this, but and I don't know how many people talk to like he talked to me because he used to bother me quite a bit, like not bother me like he used to like talk to like he just send message after message after message after message,
yeah.
And I started like painting a picture of like life in my head, and a lot of shit didn't make sense. And I came to the conclusion that whatever life he lives is bad because most of the shit that he presents is completely made up. Like, I remember once in the hardcore group, he was talking about how he likes to restore cars. And his conversations always followed somebody else. So, like, we were talking about restoring cars and then all of a sudden restores cars, right?
Yeah.
And posted this car that he's restoring, and it was a 1994 Honda Civic. But if you were to just like Google 1994 Honda Civics, you find this car and you would think there's nothing fucking special about this car. But when you're a car guy, you're looking at this 1994 Honda Civic and you're like, this is a very fucking specific car. And you don't own this car. This car wins races. Like this car, this is not your fucking car. And I remember he came to visit St. Augustine, and like he said he had to rent a car because he was buying a car for his wife, but they haven't purchased the car yet or something. And he was staying at this, he said he was staying at the Casa Monica, right? Which is this big, huge upscale hotel downtown. It costs a lot of money to stay at. But when we walked out to his car, like he had a sleeping bag in the back seat, like, and he like, it was just, it was weird. Like you could tell he didn't live a good life, and he kind of lied to make it seem like he did, which people do, you know, and no fault for that. Yep. But I feel like he used to always get pissed off defending people he thought were slighted. Right. And I feel like he did that because no one ever did that for him. Like, whether or not the people were slighted or not, I remember he like went on a long rant about some chick that he felt was slighted. And the chick was like, I don't even give a shit about any of this.
Yeah. It's not at all what he, yeah, I see what you're saying. I do remember that actually now you mentioned it, that he played like where Keith James often plays the devil's advocate. Right, like he was always the angel on everyone's shoulder. So why not make them feel better, even if they were completely wrong?
Yeah, and like he posts art that he does that's just like photoshopped pictures.
Well, wasn't he like a big art thief or something like that?
Yeah. He posted on Craigslist that he was the one that stole all the art from that Boston, and he tried to sell it for like $1 million and get caught by the FBI.
Yeah. What a dumb move that was.
Yeah. I mean, it takes all kinds, I guess, but it's like the characters that this thing, that this hunt, you know, brings, it's so fucking weird. Yeah, most of that'll get cut out.
That's fine.
All right. So we talked about your least favorite. What's your favorite thing in the past 10 years that you've experienced with the community? What's your favorite thing about the community?
Just the fact that it's maintained this long. You know what I mean? Like, in today's age where people's attention spans get shorter every day, it's wild to me that this many people can be focused on this puzzle for so long. You know what I mean? And, you know, and like, because there's still a lot of the OGs out there, and I don't even really consider myself one, but a lot of the OGs are still there, and I just love that we maintain ourselves as a group. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, we get kind of stupid sometimes and shit happens, but, you know, it's at the end of the day, we're still here. You know what I mean? And that to me is really cool. I miss Johnny Windex and people like him that, you know, they often played the other side of the coin, not to be rude or to be shitty, but to try to help people think differently. And for me, like, that was the whole point behind Cole's Corner. I said it in the very first episode, was that I'm not here making these videos to try and solve any of these puzzles. I'm here to show that there are different ways of looking at stuff that just make more sense than the way we were doing it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
And if I could be so arrogant, the fact that I was, that I, like, when I made that exit post, the amount of response that I got to it, like, it kind of put that Irish tickle in my throat where, you know, I've never felt acceptance like that, or maybe not even so much acceptance, but like people holding me up in a sense, right? I've never experienced that in my life. And it's outside of the secret community, right? Like I could go to anybody and talk to them, you know, anybody felt that they could come talk to me. I went through my email yesterday and found, I think, what was my count? Like 56 emails over the course of about 4 months that were people saying, I dig your opinions, your ideas on this puzzle. Can I get your thoughts on this? Right. Sadly, because I kind of suck in a lot of ways, but one of those ways was that I couldn't commit myself to take the time to respond to a lot of those. Right. So, I mean, overall, I apologize for that, but it's like, it's nice. This is how I like to put it. And I hope the rest of the community will take this because it's a great way of thinking about community standards in general. But it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice. And a lot of people were that for me, you know what I mean? And I think you and I and, you know, Brett and Matt and JM, of course, we're symbols to the community of, you know, not necessarily symbols of higher learning necessarily, but like we have been so invested in this for so long that people feel they can come to us and rely on us for information. And like, we're complete strangers, right? And basically until I came to Florida, you and I were kind of complete strangers, you know what I mean? And I love so much that, you know, like I try so fucking hard not to use the word celebrity here, but in a sense, in our community, we are that because people like you mentioned Cole in the community, you mentioned George, people know exactly who you're talking about, right? And there are other Georges, there are other Coles in the community, I'm sure. But, you know, to me, it's just, I like feeling important and I like feeling important because of what I know, right? Like I like to learn stuff and disseminate knowledge accordingly. That's one of my favorite things to do in life. Right? Cooking, you know, my job now, doing the secret, literally anything. I like to just learn shit and then tell people that stuff, right? Because I think they should know it too.
I don't want to say anything because you look like you're forming a thought.
No, say something.
Oh, okay.
I'm always forming thoughts. It's okay.
Then what's your favorite memory?
My very favorite memory, I mean, digging in St. Augustine will be up there for sure. Meeting Nick was a big deal for me because like him and I don't know that I've ever made a friend so fast, so deeply,
yeah.
Or rather so deeply, so fast. You know what I mean? Like he's a big deal to me and we don't talk a lot these days because my head is so up in the air that I don't really talk to a lot of people personally, but you know, meeting Nick and Jason, and of course you, you know, like these are all things that I'll never forget when it happened. Like with Nick, especially, it was funny because I was the interloper of the hardcore group, like Adam and Sabrina. And I think Nick were the guys that first started that group.
And no, that was me.
Well, was, you were in it.
No. I started that group.
Were you the guys started? Okay. So Adam was also one of the guys, but.
No. Adam started the Facebook group. I started the chat. So that whole thing started when Ashley Dufresne's brother died. And so what I did was I just got a chat group together and I was like, hey, let's buy flowers for Ashley's brother's funeral. And that chat group never fucking stopped. And it is still going on today. That's why, like, when you added me back, and you looked at the thing, it was like, I don't think you could remove me. Or no, it said George Ward was the only one that it didn't say added by.
And also, like, you asked me about my favorite memory. Like, joining the podcast to me was a big achievement. Like, I have this philosophy that in any organization, if you go high enough, you get to one guy, right? And I wanted to be one of those guys, right? So I made sure to make friends with you individually, JM, of course, Brett, who I met once I joined the podcast, and then Matt. And I remember... I had spoken to Matt Sparks online a lot previous to joining the podcast. And then the day I joined was the first day I ever saw him physically, like a picture of him kind of thing. And the first thing I said to him was, man, Matt, you're a lot older than I thought you were. Like, I thought he was young like us. Yeah. And he's like the grandfather of the secret. And I didn't mean any pejorative by it, but it was just shocking to me that because it felt like I was talking to somebody my age, right?
It was so fun when we went to San Francisco. It was the first time I met Matt. We had like a little mini meetup thing. It was like 30 people there. And Matt walks up with his daughters, and his daughter is my age. And he's in like mom jeans that are like pulled way up high. He's got a copy of The Secret like folded up in his back pocket. And like, you would look at this guy in any other situation and he would be like if he were at Comic-Con, you would be like, oh, he's a nerd that's here to see whatever. But like, yeah. as soon as he walked up and you went, oh, it's Matt, he was fucking swarmed. Every single person at the meetup was like, he was like a god. He was the local celebrity. And it was really nice to see that. In fact, at every meetup, there's always somebody there, and it's really nice to sit back and watch them get just the attention they deserve. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. No, I really enjoyed, I felt like I had achieved something when you asked me to come and co-host or just be on the show, because I had been on it a couple times prior to actually officially joining the podcast team. And, you know, we had fun. I remember a few of the conversations we had had kind of thing, but a lot of it was always just you, me, George, and you, me, Matt, and Brett. And like Brett, I connected with Brett on a level of humor. You know what I mean? Like we can make each other laugh. My love for 80s rock and roll kind of not necessarily matches his, but like we had a lot of comparable things to talk about between us. And I ended up having like some one-on-ones with him a little bit. And like, I fell in love with the guy almost immediately because he's just so damn funny. But I thought initially that he was very short. And it turns out that he's not at all. And first, I don't know why I ever thought that, but I always just pictured him being like a short little guy. And then I seen a picture of him one day, like a full body picture of him standing, I think maybe even next to you. And I was like, holy shit, like he's actually he's a tall guy like me, right?
There's a tradition that you don't know about because you never left the podcast. Where the person going out recommends who replaces them. So when JM left, he said, hey, you should bring on Bradley. And when Bradley left, he said, hey, you should bring on Cole. So Cole's leaving.
I like that.
Who should we bring on?
I probably need to think about that a little bit, but...
Oh, you can say no, you got to answer.
No, I got to say now. Okay, I think I would love it if Nick could replace me. Like if he had the time and the desire to do it, I would love to see him.
And Nick's got really good ideas. You know, when you can get him to sit down and talk about them.
Yeah. Like Nick is so fucking nice that like you'd swear he was almost Canadian. You know what I mean? Like he's just so cool. And I have so many nice things to say about that dude. Like he, in some ways, he kept me in the secret for as long as I've been here. And even when I wanted to just throw in the towel and give up all the time, like he, you know, he was always the guy that would help me maintain between you and him, you know, and Jason too. Jason Olsen is another guy that I think needs a lot more credit than he gets because of his chart. Like he put a lot of time and effort into that. He got shit on constantly for it. And, you know, but I mean,
people love his chart.
I know, but sometimes I've seen posts where people think it's stupid or whatever.
Yeah,
they don't agree in Milwaukee or whatever, but you're going to get that no matter what. But I mean, like he has, like when you really boil it down, Jason Olsen has the only external compendium to The Secret that has ever been made, right? Like that chart that he did with the cities, the flowers and the jewels, you know, nobody had done that before. And what he did there was he compiled information that the community discovered. You know what I mean? Like he put in the latitude, longitude that Robert Fox found, showed up to Fox, of course. And, you know, like he put all this information together and made it so accessible. And I think the community owes him a great deal of thanks for it. I'm sure he's gotten a lot of thanks for it, right? But I think like that's huge. Like to me, I think Jason's chart is as important as Fox finding the latitude, longitude. That stuff is all on an equal plane of importance to me, because if you don't use it, you're only kind of doing yourself a disservice, yeah. Right? And these are the people, though, that, like, the main people in my life in The Secret that have influenced me and have talked to me and validated my ideas and things like that. And, you know, I'll forever be in their debt. Right? Jason would be another good person to fill my shoes. Like, he's got great ideas. He's very knowledgeable. He's a little older than me, so he's got some experience in that, right? Also, he used to be in the Navy and stuff, so, you know, he's been places that none of us have. And you know, like, I love the community as a whole, but there are individuals within it that need to be recognized more than they are because of the efforts that they've put in to making this whole thing still succeed. You know what I mean? People that throw in the towel don't exist anymore. You know what I mean? Like, they're all gone. And to have to wade through the fucking pools of shit that people constantly have to wade through to get their ideas heard, you know, if they actually achieve something with it, like Jason did or Robert or, you know, whatever, that's a big deal, you know?
So that's the next podcast. It's going to be me, Nick, and Jason. You have to convince them now.
I would do my best. I think Jason would do it before Nick does, but I could be wrong.
Jason's landed a couple of times already.
Yeah.
So, and he's always been great to talk to.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. He's a really great guy. Both of them are. I love them like brothers. And one day I can't wait to shake Jason's hand. Like, he wants me to go down and stay there too. And I want to.
He's a lot of fun. He had never had Starbucks before we met. We met and I bought him his first Starbucks.
Surprised you didn't buy him a Dunkin' Donuts.
There wasn't a Dunkin' Donuts. There was only Starbucks.
Oh yeah.
Starbucks on Coney Island.
Yeah.
He had a
also, you know,
white mocha frappuccino.
Nice. I want to give, like, this is just going to be kind of a weird aside, and whether you keep it or not is up to you, but I'd like to give a shout out to what I call the women of The Secret. You know what I mean? Like, the, you know, Carolyn with Nick, Robin. You know, Robin and Carolyn are like sisters to me. They're angels in the world. And, you know, as a Satanist, I tell people all the time that I still think saints exist, but I don't see them the same way that canonical people do. I think saints are people that, by virtue of their very existence, just bring good into the world. And the people that I've stayed friends with throughout this whole thing, not the least of which are people like Carolyn, Robin, Sabrina, Rachel, of course. To me, that's what those people are. Like, if not only in my world, right? Like, the fact that they exist in my world at all makes my world tolerable. And if not, downright awesome, right? And so, you know, and I think about other ladies in the community that have made a big deal, like Marion, Marge, Josiane, like, you know, they just bring a different outlook on the whole thing. And not that gender really has anything to do with any of this stuff, but it's just these people have, I don't know, affected me in really positive ways. You know what I mean? And so I can't not give credit to that, right? Like, they just think about it differently. And also what I love too is that the couples in the community, like, you know, like Jason and Robin or Nick and Carolyn, like, they work on this stuff together and then they bring it out. And I just think, like, I unfortunately don't have that kind of connection. Tim couldn't give two shits about the whole thing. I was lucky she let me put up a map of Montreal in my hallway, right? Like, here in Alberta, and this is a big deal a big thing for me that I got to kind of mention, is that given that I'm so far away from anywhere that could possibly have a cask, working on it out here is sort of, I'm not going to use the word pointless, but you kind of get the idea. Like, I would have to travel so much. Like, I had to fly across an entire continent just to come and dig a hole in St. Augustine. You know what I mean? I could drive to San Francisco in 20 hours kind of thing, or Montreal is a 37-hour drive from my front door. Like, that's long. You know what I mean? And so, when people ask, well, why haven't you gotten a cask or what, you know, it's because I'm fucking a million miles away from anything. You know what I mean? We're very remote despite anything, right? And, you know, but I think at the end of the day, because people have asked me before, well, if you're so far away from all this stuff, why bother? And it's mostly because of the community, right? Like, I just love being part of something like anybody else does, right? I was part of a community growing up, and it was the Marilyn Manson fan community, right? Which in itself kind of, it was really difficult growing up in a small town in rural Alberta, where it's so hillbilly here. Like, we are the Texas of Canada. And it's, you know, so it was really tricky and really hard to stay yourself within that community. Whereas this one, because it's so diverse in its people, like in its population, it's actually really easy to be, you know, any kind of a person and still work on this puzzle. Like, these puzzles were not directed at any specific type of person. Like, yeah, we've heard that teenagers in a library somewhere, and we've heard all kinds of shit. But I think at the end of the day, it's so open about who could find these things, right? The potential is always there. And whether we like it or not, we're all on the same team. We all have the exact same objective. Like, how many people are actually in the Facebook community? Like 13,000 or something like that?
Like 19,000.
19,000. So we're almost at 20,000 people. The city I live in, when I first moved here in 2003, had 30,000 people in it, right? So it basically had the secret community in one city, you know, and then we broke 100,000 in 2010, I think it was, or something like that. But anyways, we have all these people, and like very few of us are exactly the same or anything like that. Like, we're all quite diverse, and yet we're all still working together, right? And I mean, we disagree on things. We talk about, you know, different cities that we know aren't true, things like that. We've even built, like, I gotta say, this is probably one of your greatest achievements ever, was we've built a community inside the Alternative Cities group, right? Like, that you threw that group up there and was like, fuck it, if you think it's somewhere else that's not one of these 12, go there. And now there's a community being built there, right? Like, that's incredible to me.
That, I think that's what keeps people involved in this, right? It's not the hunt, because the hunt's kind of dumb. You know, it's like when you talk to your friends about it or whatever, like your outside friends, your real life friends, it's kind of dumb and you feel kind of childish. But
yeah,
the community is, you know, I think the community is what keeps people around, especially doing, you know, doing shit like meetups and secret bananas. Yeah. I don't know.
I'd like to see, like, I would love to see a post one day where people just, like, I want to hear the first sentence of how you describe the secret to people that are not in the secret. You know what I mean? Like, when I tell people I'm part of a treasure hunting community, right? Or I've got I'm podcasting for this treasure hunting community. What's the treasure hunt? You have to digest 40 years of fucking information into one sentence. How do you do it? You know what I mean? Like, if people comment on this post when you post this, I want to hear how they do that, because yeah, I'm sure it's entertaining as hell. You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
I want to hear everybody's elevator pitch. Everybody elevator pitch about the secret. Because yeah, we've all got one.
Oh, 100%. And Canadians and Americans probably do it quite a bit differently than each other. You know what I'm saying? Like, because y'all could talk about the places. You know what I mean? Like, I never knew Grant Park existed until I got into the secret. I never knew fucking the Italian Gardens existed. I didn't know anything, right? I didn't know St. Augustine, Florida, the city, existed until I got to fucking the secret. You dig?
That's fine. We don't know what Celsius is.
No, exactly. And y'all don't know what beer is either. Nah.
Don't you have like watered down bullshit beer? We got at least tall cans. So there you go.
Dude, you guys have 24-ounce cans of Twisted Tea, and that's pretty impressive to me.
Americans, they don't know what beer is. Tell other Milwaukee. What beer is Canadian? Molson? Nobody
drinks Molson Labatt. Budweiser gets made here, but it's not.
Budweiser gets made in Jacksonville. Budweiser gets made everywhere.
There's a meme that I saw a long time ago, and it was a two-framer, one on top of the other. And the top frame had like a bunch of guys under a beer tap with their golden beer in their mugs. Yeah. And the bottom one was a bunch of guys with those same mugs filling it with water, and it said American beer on that one.
My favorite beer joke is, how is Budweiser and having sex in a boat similar?
Tell me.
They're both fucking close to water.
Yes. 100%. I like it.
All right. What are there any parting messages you want to send? Because I like we're doing this like you're never going to be around, but you're going to be back. Like everybody leaves the secret, everybody comes back. I give you a year, and you'll be like George, I got an idea for an episode. We should do.
Yeah. Well, first of all, am I welcome back?
Yeah, everybody's welcome back. Dude, that's the thing, man. That's why family first is rule number one. Shit happens in your life, and yeah. Your life is more fucking important than this. It's more important than the community. It's more important than being a mod. It's more important than being on a podcast. Your life is the most important. And when you need to take time for your life, take time. Take as much time as you want. Seeker's been around 40 years, not going anywhere. You know, we'll still be here when you get back. So welcome back. Dude, no one is ever considered to have left, right? Like even John Michaels.
Yeah.
We were doing a thing with Jackie with her cast. I was making her a login for 12 Treasures so she could update all of her stuff. And I told her, I was like, there's only two people who have logins for 12 Treasures, and it's me and John Michaels. John Michaels still has a fucking login. John Michaels could still, if he were alive, still has the password to the to the email address. He still has all that stuff. Bradley still has access to everything that he had when he left. You come back and it's like you never left. We're still here. We're still friends. You're not leaving friends, you know?
Placate my ego for a moment. In the time that we've known each other and the time that you've seen me in the community, do you have a favorite memory with me? Or of me?
Whoopee. That's my favorite fucking... Wowee, that's it. That is my favorite fucking memory. And it'll never beat it. And it's almost my favorite memory of just bringing someone to Florida. That one moment riding in a tram where I was like, look at that building, Cole. And you were like, wowee. And I'm just like, it's a building. Because, like, I think that illustrated to me a lot of what we forget in the secret. Like, especially if you live in the city. Like, that whole complex, like, I'll just send you random pictures there because I'm having lunch, you know? And you're just like, holy shit. And I'm just like, I'm just having fucking lunch, dude. Like, it becomes these things in our lives that are so, so special. Become so normal that it's always good to put it under perspective, like to see it through someone else's eyes. So that 100% will always be my favorite memory of Cole.
Nice.
Watching you on your hands and knees of the Daytona 500 finish line, trying not to burn the shit out of yourself. Like I think maybe people don't realize how heat works in Florida. Yeah. Until you touch asphalt.
Yeah. No, I remember when I first knelt down to try to sign it. Like, first of all, like you hear the words 33 degrees of banking, you don't really take much of it. But when you're on it, it was really hard to walk from the bottom to the top. Like people were helping each other lift up. And I remember when I first knelt down, it like I could hear my knee sizzle. And I was like, whoa, that's fucking hot.
Yeah. I think the best I've ever seen Cole was in the hardcore chat when you were dealing with Adam, because you were able to like keep a group that was falling apart together and identify a problem. And then you spent God only knows how much time. I don't even remember if it was almost a week just trying to fix the problem before making the problem go away. So I think that's the best Cole I've ever seen. It showed that you have the ability, like you, number one, you have friends, you have people who like back you up. You have people who give a shit about what you say. You have people who care about your opinion and your feelings, and you're able to reciprocate that and care about those people and their feelings and corral an impossible problem and fix it. So
thank you.
You're very well.
As far as parting messages go, first of all, I didn't do this again. Like, I don't need people to placate my ego. I just ask for it sometimes because I don't really allow myself to have an ego in the egotistical sense, right? But I guess if nothing else, this whole podcast was sort of a reflection of how I feel given how I see myself within the community, right? And how others see me as well. As far as, you know, going anywhere, the spirit of me will always be here and people can always still message me and stuff like that. I just, I want people to collaborate better, not more, but better, right? And be willing to be wrong is probably one of the most valuable pieces of information or advice that I've ever gotten. And of course, I got that from you. And because I think that's what ends up getting tasks, of people being willing to be wrong until they're not. You know what I mean? Like, I used to say that I took I had an approach that I would use where, oh, like Dr. House was the example I used to always use, where it's they do their differential cross examination or whatever. I'm going to tell you this, that it's here. I want you to prove to me that it's not, right? Or show me what it isn't, right? Show me. So let's say, for instance, I tell somebody, I think it's at Mount Stephen Club. Tell me why I'm wrong, right? And maybe that's what made me popular in a sense, if you will, is that I'm okay with being proven wrong about a lot of things. When JM told me that nobody ever really questioned Milwaukee at that time, I thought, okay, and I moved on, right? Like it was not, well, I'm stuck here in this thing. It's got to be this and you're wrong because you don't have a cask and all this bullshit. I've never espoused those kind of ideas. It's if you can't tell me I'm wrong and prove it, then maybe I'm onto something, right? And vice versa. Like if I can't sit there and tell you, okay, well, no, it can't be there because in 1985 was when they built this thing or whatever, right? If I can't do that, then to me, that's an idea worth pursuing, right? That's an idea that is worth digging further into. But if somebody can straight up tell you, you know, like, let's say you have a theory about a certain place, but that place, you know, the monument that you're using as your kind of pedestal, if you will, if that wasn't there at the time of the book, then people generally move on. And one of two things happens. They either quit the community altogether, or they move on to a different city and try to do the same thing they did in the first one there, right? And so, I mean, if I can offer any kind of parting advice, it's, you know, be willing to be wrong. And also, like, work together, right? Don't work as a group, just as a group, but work together, right? Like, you're not just a person in a pile of people. You are a person whose ideas could potentially crack the whole thing open. And so you should never be afraid to express them, even in the face of people that will tell you, since you don't have a cask, your opinions don't mean shit. I'd forget those people personally. Like, I have personally done that, where it's like, okay, well, if that's the way you're going to argue or the way you're going to talk about this stuff, then it's not worth my time, right? And those kind of people aren't worth your time, right? Stick to people that are, build groups within the larger group, but still maintain a relationship to that larger group, right? And just you know, be kick-ass to each other, because it's so fucking hard to be anyone these days, let alone be who you actually want to be, especially in a large community. Like, our community is sort of a microcosm, if you will, of society at large, in a way that you kind of wish society would exist on. You know what I mean? Like, the way we talk to each other, even when we argue and stuff and disagree and things like that, at the end of the day, we're all still here and we're all still part of the same goal. And you know, you're not going to ever achieve that goal by just constantly shutting people down, and people shutting you down constantly isn't going to achieve that goal either. So, you know, figure out your people, and then take what you learn from doing that and apply it to the larger community. And I think you'll have a lot better time. You may not ever find a cask. None of these, like the other nine, may not ever be found, but at least in 20 years, the people that are, if this community is still around in 20 years or even 10 years, you know, they're going to remember all this, and they're going to use the information that we develop and that we put out there. And I hope that it doesn't become like a big thing where it's, you know, the people of 2025 were dumb because of X or we're wrong because of Y. I hope it doesn't evolve into that, right? Like, as long as people can maintain not doing that, then I think we'll still be here as long as the casks are in the ground, right? And I hope, too, that after they're all found, I hope that we're still all kicking it around a fire going, you know, remember that time we found that cask, right? I love each and every one of you. I hope maybe one day my life will have room for this sort of thing again. And yeah, I guess that's about it.
All right. I love each and every one of you. Seemed like a good place to end anyway.
Yeah.